System from the ground up using ArcGIS software. I presented the conceptual ideas for the system at this conference 2 years ago in Bakersfield, as some of you might recall. The system has been completed and is now in production, and we're about to show you how it works. So we're going to do some actual assessor mapping. Next slide, please. We actually had quite a bit of inspiration for this system, so here's a list of who you can blame. We stole ideas from three other county assessor groups, and we co-opted the concept of feature tagging from Sidwell's Parcel Builder. And I don't see Sidwell here today, so I can't razz him too much. Although our system turned out quite different than any other that we're aware of, I'd like to point out that we did not use a formal project development process. We simply did a lot of experimenting and prototyping. We didn't even really have a clear view of what we were working towards, except for some high-level ideals and concepts that we learned about from these folks. After the first few months of poking around in the dark, we gradually started identifying more specific goals, and as time marched on, so did our progress. Next slide, please. We started out with some ArcGIS software and some limited knowledge of how it works. Our GIS coordinator already had a server, ArcSDB, and SQL Server in place. For the Kern County, for our internet mapping system, basically. And at the time, we were kind of providing a parcel shapefile for that. We were also fortunate. We were fortunate to be able to leverage these existing resources at no additional cost to our department. We were also fortunate to have an ambitious group of people who were willing to support this project until it was completed. The first person turned out to be me. And the second one turned out to be Mark. And the other three did most of the regular work and answered most of the phone calls while Mark and I concocted. All of us have become quite efficient in the use of AutoCAD, although we've only managed to convert about 20% of our maps. And that's been over about the last 12 years of AutoCAD. Next slide, please. We also had a polygon shape file for all of the land parcels, which was maintained separately from the CAD files, meaning all of our parcels had to be drawn twice because the CAD drawings were not georeferenced. Maintaining the shapefile constituted our only use of ArcGIS at that time. But we knew that someday we would come up with something better, and the ArcGIS would be worth the price of admission. Our shapefile was tied to section corners created by our engineering department. Next slide, please. Over the last 2 years, we've experienced a dramatic decrease in subdivisions and other parcel changes, as I'm sure most of you have, due to the slow economy. We could have sat around and twiddled our thumbs, but the slowdown turned out to be just what we needed to get this project done. We used some very oversimplified numbers and calculations for this comparison here of in-house cost versus professional fees, but it kind of gets the point across. Next slide. So, after watching slides all morning, let's jump into a demo. We're going to kind of actually run through the making of a simple assessor map from start to finish. So enjoy. Rather than try to store every map sheet in a separate NXD file, which some of you may be familiar with, we chose to create a standard ArcMap template, or NXT file. And you'll notice quite a few layers in the table of contents. It looks like a lot, but because of the way they're organized, it's actually fairly easy to get used to them. And we tested this with one of our other guys who just kind of really picked up on it and started going with it. They're organized into three main groups. At the very top there, we have our master data, what we call our master data. That's our core data features in the geodatabase. These layers, though, have the symbology that is optimized for editing the geometry and tagging lines. And we'll get into the tagging in just a little bit. In the middle, we have a little group there called reference. And this data is not editable, and it also doesn't display on the final assessor map. The only reason it's there is for reference only. These layers provide additional information for us drafters. We got Ghostbusters in here. We need Ghostbusters. They provide additional information that we may need to view in order to complete a map. An example of this is the TRA layer, which is kind of hard to see there, but there's some red lines that are kind of half transparent. Those are the tax rate area boundaries. In the event, they only serve to alert the drafter of where they are. Because, as you know, in the event you're about to do a parcel combine or something like that, you need to know if there's TRA lines in the area. And then the last group there is called layout. These are the features that will actually display on the maps. So their symbology is optimized for map display. Layers showing line features are optimized for their appropriate line types and line weights. Layers showing point features are set up for automatic labeling. And there's some layers that are set up to show annotation features. So we use all three. We use lines, we use labels, and we use annotation. In the layout view here that we're sitting in now, we've created some title block elements, and these are now standard on every one of our map sheets. And we standardize our title block, so the elements are always in the same position on every map sheet. This not only makes it easy to store these elements in the template, but it also makes the look and feel of the maps much more consistent. Just a few things I'd like to point out specifically on there. And can we zoom into that lower right corner for that little pilot block piece? Let you see that a little closer. First, you'll notice that the north arrow is now always in the same spot on the map, whereas it used to kind of roam around the upper right corner of our maps. Depending on how much information was there, we'd move it out of the way, or it would rotate, and we'd kind of jockey it around. Now it's always in the same spot. And when you rotate the map data frame, the arrow rotates right along with it. So that little round-shaped north arrow seemed pretty well suited for that purpose. You'll also notice that the disclaimer statement, which is kind of running along the right edge of the map there, this map is for assessment purposes only, blah, blah, blah. Now it's kind of just stuck to the right edge of the map where it's never going to move. That also used to be something we move around depending on what the map looked like. And finally, notice that all the layout elements are assigned an element name. So for instance, that scale text value there, you'll notice there's a little box on that dialog called element name. Just kind of pointing this out because when I show you the custom tools later on, we actually use these names because you can refer to them in your programming code. And that way you can manipulate individual elements on this map. Okay, so if we cancel and zoom back out to the whole page. All right, back to our layout. And just briefly, you might notice the toolbars look a little different than the out-of-the-box setup. So we've kind of added tools to the toolbars. You know how you go and customize the toolbars. I'm sure anybody in here using the software has done that. So we've made them make a little more sense. The tools are clustered a little better to where it's easier to find things. Other than that, those are the only real customizations to the template that we've made. Just the layers, the elements, and the toolbars. And of course, the custom programming code, which is in right now, is in VBA. So let's take a look now at custom tools. There's one little button on our toolbar down there that opens up a Windows form. And if you remember my presentation 2 years ago, the form looked a lot simpler then. This has really come a long way and has blossomed into a full-blown application. You'll notice it contains a number of tabs across the top, and as well as some a few buttons and things above the tabs. But the tabs they represent different phases of the workflow. So in general, we always start with the layout tab. And this is one of the features that we're most proud of with this system. Now the basic unit of work, of course, is the book page. So we start by entering a 5-digit book page value up in the very top upper left corner of the tool. That's going to be the book page that we're going to choose to work with right now. We're going to kind of jump through a few of them before we get into our actual work, just to show you how this feature works. So he's gone now to book 408, page 44. Now you'll notice there's a load button right there at the top. If we click load, blam. There's our map. Now there's quite a bit of programming code, of course, in the background that has gone into that. This is a typical layout that we've previously saved in the geodatabase. So this, in other words, this layout has a definition. There's a bunch of fields that describes how to recreate it. And the system just goes and looks that stuff up and then runs some queries and whatnot and puts this map back together again on the fly. So this, for this reason, there's no need to save separate MXD files for every map. We'll show you another one, book 240, page 00. And page 00, of course, is what we use to indicate an index map. And sometimes it takes a little while for things to redraw. I've actually got a printout of this map right here with me. If anybody wants to see some printouts of maps that came out of this system, I have brought a few with me, so if you just come up to me afterwards, I'll be glad to show them to you. They do tend to look quite different when they're printed than on the screen. Okay, let's. You might notice up in the upper right corner, too, where it shows the book and page number, right below that, there's a little box that has popped up on this map to indicate that it's the index for that map book. And that is something we can actually set on the tool. There's actually some, a little checkbox right there. Why don't you turn it off, Mark? And click set, and you'll see it vanish. That's an example of that programming code that references the element name. All it does is reorder it and sends it to the back. Okay, let's take a look now if we zoom back up, the whole play out. Or I guess you may not have to. Let's pull up book 331, page 17. Now this map layout for this book page does not yet exist. We haven't made it yet. So the tool is telling us in a little dialogue there that the layout was not found, but here's a partial layout for us to complete. So the tool has actually zoomed us to the general area of those parcels that would appear on that page. And it has made an intelligent guess as to what scale we want it to be drawn at. So there's a little bit of artificial intelligence implied in there. And in this case, it's telling us it's 1 inch equals 100 feet, which we would actually probably go ahead and use. But if we didn't want to, we could go ahead and change the scale. That little box right there, click set. And it'll just change the scale for us on the fly. And it also, of course, it also centers those parcels within the layout view. Let's go to book 167, page 9.
How are your map extents defined in the geodatabase?
Pardon me?
How are your map extents defined in the geodatabase? Is there a separate page?
How is what defined?
The map extent defined.
The map extent is defined in two fields, actually three fields, an X and Y coordinate for the center of the map, and a scale value. And then the ARC objects programming does the rest. It just zooms that point to the center of the map, and then sets the scale. So it's kind of like panning and then zooming, but it does it in programming code. That only took three fields, three attributes in the table. Okay, this is the area we're going to start working in, kind of add a new simple subdivision into this map. So you might notice too, if you move the tool out of the way, this map page here is rotated 90 degrees, so the north arrow is pointing left. And that, of course, is also one more field in that table, and it's just an angle value is all it is. So when you hit load on the tool, it's just going through a series of things. Zoom to that center, scale it to that scale, rotate it this way. It's just stepping through a checklist of items. So, okay, let's see. We're going to zoom in a little bit to the area where we're going to insert a new track. We've got some new lots that have gone in here. You know what? We first have to try to load the page where we're going to work on, which is 167.13. And of course, it tells us that that layout is not found because that page doesn't exist yet. So what's happened here is when it guessed the scale to use, couldn't find a page for that book, so it zoomed us to the whole book, which is that whole section right there. So now we've got to kind of zoom in by eye a little bit to get to that area for the track. And you'll notice that we're kind of close to a scale there, but we want to get it exact. So we've got a little tool there to set the scale to exactly 1 inch equals 80 feet. And if you click on that drop down for the scales mark, yeah, that one up there. We've got a set of standard scales that we tend to work with, and there's very, very few maps, if any, that would ever be on a different scale of a map. So we kind of define some standard scales that we tend to work with, although it is possible for us to go outside and choose a random scale if we really need to. Things get a little more complicated that way, so we're not going to be demoing that. You might have noticed while I was talking, he kind of panned the map into a little bit nicer position for us. And we might want to type in a title for this track, too. So we've got a tool for that. You just type in what you want. We can put in up to 3 lines of text for the title. And it really doesn't matter which box you type in either. It'll work with that. So once he clicks the set button, you'll see the text pops onto the layout view there. And if you happen to have a map where the lines are kind of encroaching up into that title block area, you can reposition the title block side to side if you'd like. But in most cases, and in this case, we just want to click the center button and pop it right into the center of the map. Okay, now once we're happy with the way the layout looks, he's already clicked the save button. And you might have noticed earlier too that anything you change on that form, that save button turns yellow, so it's kind of a little visual cue to the drafter that, hey, you changed something on the layout, you might want to click save again before you go to something else. So you can see by now a lot of thought has gone into this. Alright, we're going to now import some CAD data. We're going to start by working with basic geometry. So you might want to turn off the layout layer group. That's fine. We'll load the CAD data first.
I knew that took a while.
Okay, he's already kind of navigated to the CAD file, and as any of you who've dealt with CAD files in here before know that if you just double click on the DWG file, you get this little list of kind of like geometric categories that it can pull out of that CAD file separately. So we want just the polylines out of that CAD file. And by the way, in the CAD file, all we've done is just drafted the basic line work like on layer zero. So there's nothing special at all about the CAD file. It was just quicker and easier for us to draw an AutoCAD. We still can't get over the ease of drafting and how fast it is to draw an AutoCAD. This system will let us do it either way, though. You can actually draw or COBOL your data right in ArcMap if you want. Or you can keep your AutoCAD and then just set the data in like we're going to do here. Okay, so if we turn off, we turned off the layer group, let's turn off that reference group also. Okay, so we kind of already know where the TRA boundaries are here. So
how do you know where the georeference the cover that or did I
miss? We just drew it in place.
Yeah, in this case, to speed up the demo and so that everybody can eat lunch, we've got canned data. Yes, I know, I hate canned data and I'm using it. Okay, I understand why you guys do that now. let me find my place here. We loaded the polyline subcomponent of the CAD file. We noticed that the TRA lines are not really going to affect this project, but because they are right along the outer edge, that tells us that we do need to be careful not to delete these existing lines along that edge because they contain attributes that we want to keep for our tags. If we were to delete those lines, we would no longer know that that's a TRA line. Okay, so we don't want to lose those existing tags. Now, the easiest way to proceed from here is to select all the features in the CAD layer. You can just do that by right-clicking the layer itself. And then set the target layer. And we have actually, in the geodatabase, an individual scratch workspace for each drafter. And then we simply copy. Switch to data view. Workspace. So this is kind of a two-step process. First, we bring it into our scratch workspace, and normally I would go ahead and validate the topology on that line work in the scratch workspace right now, because I want everything to be topologically correct within just that data. In other words, I want my lines all to be split at the intersections and have no dangles or things like that. Okay, normally I would also then georeference this track and edge match it into place. And we would normally use a lot of either using tie lines to move and rotate it into place, or I'll mention a little later, we also keep quality codes on the lines themselves, which can give us an idea of which line work is better quality. So the better quality line work won't get manipulated as much. So there's various ways that we would go about edge matching it. But in this case, this is canned data that's ready to skip all that for the sake of time. So pretending I just finished doing that stuff, now I'll decide which overlapping features to delete. Since I want to preserve the tags on the existing lines, I'll keep the existing lines in this case and copy only those new lines that don't overlap the old. Alternatively, I could use the attribute transfer tool in ArcMap to transfer the tags from the old lines to the new ones, and then I could delete the existing lines. If that's not too confusing. I might choose this strategy if I were introducing, say, new circular arcs into the data that I drew in AutoCAD and that were not in my original data set. And that happens a lot in this case, since our original data was a shapefile, which doesn't support arcs. Okay, and again, we'll set the target layer. We set it to our master data, which is our core data set, and do another copy and paste. Now, if we clear the selections and turn the scratch layer off, you will see that our data is now integrated. And normally, at this point, again, I would validate the topology on the master lines to make sure all the edge matching went as planned. But our CAM data is perfect, and thus, we're ready to move on. Now, to show you the line tags. This is the fun part.
You have one line feature set with multiple tags.
Yes. And this is the part that we kind of stole the concept from Sidwell, but we've implemented it quite differently. Now we're going to switch to the lines tab on our custom mapping tool form. Applying tags to the lines is perhaps the most crucial part of this process, since so much depends on them downstream. We'll start with land parcel mountains. You'll see a series of checkboxes there. There's a checkbox for every possible tag type. This is pretty simple. You just select the features you want. Choose a tag, I already did, and click the Add button. You'll notice the form kind of turned bright red there for an instant. That's because the more features you get selected, the longer it takes. And some of the guys were noticing that if it was taking a while and they went off and tried clicking on other things, it might interfere with the process. So we made the form turn red just so that they know not to do anything else while it's red. Okay. Now, I told you earlier we also keep track of a relative position of quality. So we keep a quality code on our lines, as you can see there at the bottom. And while we have them all selected already, we might as well apply that now. Okay, so now we have land parcel tags and quality codes applied. Now, since most of these features will no longer appear as parcel boundaries on page 9, except for those two little ones at the very top, so we want to unselect a couple lines because those are still parcel boundaries on page 9. Page 9 being the adjacent page. We need to remove those tags related to that page. So we will change the book page to page 9 and then click the Remove button. Okay, and lastly, there is one new feature here that will appear as a parcel boundary on page 9. So we need to add one more tag for a parcel boundary, that one little one at the bottom. So you just select it, click Add. now. We've cleared the selections. Now, as flawless an editor as I remarked may be, we've designed a system to allow the other drafters in the office to check their work. So we have a series of special layers over there called tags. And this special layers are set up with definition queries to show nothing but specific tags. So if we've already expanded that, they could. For example, this layer at the top there is for land parcels, land parcel boundaries. We have another one for street rights of way. There we go, street rights of way. And we can show you one more time the TRA boundaries at the bottom. So you can see just by toggling these special layers on and off, that the definition queries just those features we want to see. So this color coding system makes it fairly simple to spot tagging errors. So let's go ahead and turn that group off. And we'll collapse it so it's not our way anymore. Now, we need to wrap up some loose ends on page 9. So let's load that layout once more. After adding the new subdivision, we need to update a few more line tags on this page to indicate some page boundaries. So if we zoom in close to that subdivision again here, there's where we added our new line work. There's three lines on here. We're really wrestling with screen space for this demo. Okay, we want to select those two on the left that we indicated earlier are page boundaries for page, or parcel boundaries for page 9, and the one on the right. Select the one right. There we go. And we do have lots of buttons. Okay, and he set his tag there for a page block boundary, and we want those to be solid lines because they're also shown as parcel lines on this page. So click Add. And with the layout group turned on, we can see the immediate effects of that. Now those lines along the top of the subdivision there, we want to take care of those too. And also that diagonal one there on the left. Now those we want to switch to a page block boundary that is a dashed line because those lines are not parcel boundaries, so we want those to be a heavy dash. So go ahead and add those tags. Oops, where did they go? Clear the selection. Now it looks like they're gone, but they're still there. But they need now to be added into a special feature class for non-solid line types. This special feature class is configured with cartographic representations to handle repeating patterns, such as dashes, so that they will have a more consistent look. We could use the construct features tool in ArcMap, but we've programmed a button to do this for us automatically, of course. Right there in the bottom right corner is called Build Non-Solid Lines. Now it's kind of zoomed out automatically on us there, but if we zoom into it again, zoom into that track again. Show you what I was talking about. Without representations, that dash pattern along the top there would actually start over at every one of those line intersections and would really look lousy. So our little button there has actually done quite a bit of work. It's actually done the construct features behind the scenes, which also actually merges all those line segments together. So it's actually duplicated the lines, but they're in a separate special feature class just for that purpose. Okay, can you hear me? Okay, now to demonstrate one of the advantages of this tagging system, notice the lines here displaying as a heavy dashed line type here on page 9. But if we switch back to page 13, page 13, you only see the normal parcel boundaries just as we tagged them earlier. So to sum this up, any given line is drawn only once, but it can be displayed as a different feature on each page where it appears. Okay, let's zoom out to the whole layout again. Okay, now we're ready to annotate this map. I'm going to switch now to the Points tab on the interface. And you'll see a variety of different point types there that we can apply. Much of our map annotation is accomplished using point features that are auto-labeled. This tab allows us to add those point features very easily. Since the labels are predefined in the ArcMap template, we're free to focus on the label text and the precise placement of the point features on the map. We usually like to start with APNs, so that's the default point type. The APN attribute for each point will be based on the book page value at the top and a block value right there, and a parcel value. So it kind of builds the APN out of those three values. Now we're not going to block this page, so the value in the block box can remain at zero. And since we're starting with parcel one, the value in that box can remain at a one. Let's make it a little easier. Oh, we're already pretty much zoomed in. Okay. Notice that each parcel... zoom in a little more and turn on the APN points. Parcel points. Now this is in our geometry group, so we're going to just see a simple point feature and the APN attribute that it holds. So you see that each parcel area has a centroid point within it and an APN attribute, except for our new parcels, of course. All we have to do is click the Add New Point button and go. And yes, the parcel numbers are auto sequencing. You'll see the parcel number changing at the top there on the form as it goes. Now, clear the selections. And to see what this looks like with real symbology, we'll turn those parcel points off and turn the layout group back on. And you'll see how the symbology just takes that attribute value and creates a symbol. Okay, next we'll add some lot numbers. So we'll select the survey lots point type and enter a beginning lot number in this little box. We're going to start with 1. And again, as he starts going there, the number is incrementing automatically. Okay, clear the selections, and now we have ATMs and lot numbers. Now, I know what some of you may be thinking. Can we show the acreage below the ATM? Well, yes, we can. We can enter an acreage value down there at the bottom of the form and click the set button. Well, we've got to select one we want to add it to. Click set, and it adds the acreage to the bottom. Now, we can also change it to look differently if our if the shape of the parcel requires it. Make the acreage appear to the right. But on this map, we don't really need it at all, so we'll just turn it off. Okay, we did the selections. And now here's another cool trick. Using representations is how we accomplish this. If we using the representation toolbar, we're going to use the direct select tool to select that point. Now he can just pick up that ATM circle and drag it off the parcel. Now if we turn on the parcel points again, you'll see that the point itself never moved, just the representation of that point moved. So we just moved the cartographic representation of the point. The point is still inside the polygon where it can participate properly in polygon geoprocessing later on. Okay. Now let's add a few bubbles. Go ahead and zoom back up to the full layout. And let's select an adjacent page. And let's put page 11 on the left and the top left. And page 8, it will be on the right. Page 9 to the top and bottom. Okay. Now we can finish this map with some actual annotation features and a few additional cartographic goodies. So let's take a look now at the Carto tab on our form. And let's look again at parcel 1. We zoom back into parcel 1. Uh, obviously, if we're going to leave that parcel number out there on the right, we need a leader arrow pointing into the parcel. So we just click on ATN up there under leader arrows, and then we click on the arrowhead position, then the ATN circle edge, and then a bulge factor for this arc. Now, you may notice that if you can see the colors on the screen, that arrow has turned red instead of black. It does that because it's not yet associated with a book page. For reasons that are kind of hard to explain, any features created with this tab are not associated with a book page immediately, like the point features. But don't worry, they'll be associated with a book page pretty soon. First, let's add a dimension or two. Just click the dimension button and type in 183.14, say. And this is defaulting at follow feature. So we just click the line and then click the dimension into place. Then we can type in 42.00 and get our nice little curved dimension on that cul-de-sac. And 131.80. And so on and so forth. We're not going to dimension all of these. If you want a land hook, those are pretty easy too. It can be any length you want. And they could even be curved arcs if you want also. And they actually print out better than they might look on the screen. I'd like to point out that these buttons are actually configuring my editing environment for me. Each button will automatically set the editing task, the target layer, the annotation symbol, and the annotation construction method. All we have to do is enter the text. Beyond that, we're just actually using the standard annotation tools that are built into ArcMap. We could configure all these settings manually each time, but at a great cost to efficiency. For instance, there are 112 different symbols in our symbol list. Finding one among so many is going to be tedious at best. So the tool makes that really simple for us. Notice, for instance, to create a street name, we just enter in some text. And this street has a really cool name. Chattahoochee. I don't care if you spell it right or not. And then click on button. And the default construction method for a street name is follow feature, although we could change that if we wanted to. But in this case, we'll keep the default. And we'll just choose a line to follow. Now, if there were a center line here, I could have followed it instead. So we'll just need to move that into final position. Okay, looks good to me. Now, as I promised earlier, we'll associate all those red objects with the current book page that is displayed at the top of the tool, simply by clicking one button there at the bottom of the tool. And it's called Apply Book Page. That button is actually determining the rectangular area that is defined by this layout and searching for any of those cartographic objects that we've placed there that have no book page. And then it's just simply taking the book page from the top and filling in the attributes. So, and they change from red to black, like magic. Now, if our map were considered complete, we could return to the layout tab and reload the layout for this page. And it's actually pretty close to complete. This is a simple one. And at this point, we'd be ready to print. Of course, there's still a little work left to do on page 9, and some adjacent page bubbles on pages 8 and 11. But the techniques are the same as what you just saw. You may have noticed that the surrounding parcel boundaries are displayed on the map, but they're printed as really light gray lines that have a sort of a ghostly appearance, unlike what you see on the computer screen. And again, if you want to see some of the samples that I printed out, you can see me later. Polygons are generated on a periodic basis by using geoprocessing tools within Model Builder. The lines are filtered according to their tags and converted to polygons, which get their attributes from the point features. So, in a nutshell, is our new mapping system. So, any questions?
Did you choose to show the parcel lines surrounding the book page?
I'm sorry?
As opposed to dissolving the surrounding parcels surrounding your book page, why did you choose to keep the ghost parcel lines in there?
Because when we looked at our old maps, it looked like kind of a map just floating in space, and there was no real context. But we didn't want those surrounding parcels to kind of overshadow the map either, because it gets confusing if they're too dark.
Right.
So we just chose, we decided to compromise and settle on a really light gray. And if you take a look at one of the printouts, you'll kind of see what I mean.
It might seem a little useful too because of
this is kind of like that old adage of whatever parcel you want to see is always at the edge of two different tiles. Well, this way you can kind of see some context for your map.
Okay.
Your last point for the point feature class, why
did
you have to do that?
Well, for several reasons. Number one, because they provide the centroid point that gives, when we geoprocess and create polygons later, they provide the begin for the polygon. And number two, they serve as something to apply an automatic label.
Well, I said that the ABN is a lot number.
So because a lot number is just kind of confined to a very small space, we saw no reason to use annotation. We kind of confined the use of annotation to things that weren't well suited for a little small compact area, like a street name, or a note. Or
do you then use the representation, rebuild it into a polygon, and use that as a point? So the polygon has a lot number as well, or do you not bother with that?
No, once the polygons are generated, whoever gets the polygons can label those however they want. But we don't really, polygons never participate in any of this mapping,
right,
that we just demo. Polygons are just something that we create later for the rest of the GIS world. So this whole system is just designed for our own assessment, mapping, maintenance purposes. But it's designed so it can create not only the parcel polygons, but we can create a whole TRA layer, we can create mineral parcels, we can create subdivision boundaries, any number of different things that we have a tag for. Because the tag is what allows us to query out just what we want.
So your hooks in your leader were also point feature classes, right?
The hooks and the leaders are lines, but they're in the cartographic features. So they're not part of the core features because they don't really represent any kind of a real world feature. They're just for the assessment map. They're specific to that map. So anything in that cartographic group, we actually, an annotation is in there, and then there's cartographic lines and cartographic points. And anything in that cartographic group is generated just specially for the assessor maps on the paper. So in the future, if everything eventually goes to the internet completely, all we got to do is just delete that Cardo stuff. The paper maps don't exist anymore. All the core features are still there. I think it's we're getting hungry.
By the way, Jim is going to be here today and tomorrow, so if there's more questions, which I'm pretty sure there are, he'll be around. Now I would like to invite everybody to move to the next room where lunch has been waiting for us.